What's up, it's Chase Young.
What's up, this is Terry McLaurin.
This is Carson Wentz, and you're listening to Washington Football Talk Podcast.
The good news is that Ron Rivera has a historic track record of getting his teams to turn it around when it's unexpected. The bad news is I'm not entirely sure that's possible with this squad. 1-3, 0-2 in the division, and it's October bleeping 2nd. This is a podcast.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
What up, everybody? We're in Dallas. We're drinking Jerry's beer. We're all kind of pissed off. This was a very, very winnable game that the Commanders chose not to win. The biggest problems by a mile are the very dysfunctional marriage of Carson Wentz and this offensive line. The decisions being made at right guard for the Washington Commanders are an absolute indictment on everyone from the equipment crew to Dan Snyder and everybody in between, because you went from Brandon Scherff to that. And maybe he wanted to leave, fine, but you went from Brandon Scherff to that. And the fact that Rie gets hurt, then Schweitzer gets hurt, and you're just cooked, it's the NFL. There's injuries on the offensive line. Like, you're just cooked. Your goose is cooked. We're brought to you by Orsman Automotive of Virginia. They are incredibly, exponentially more functional than the Commanders' offense. Go buy a car from them. They could use the help.
Dude, we got a tweet from a guy who went and bought his pickup truck from there.
Terrific.
That was the highlight of the weekend.
That might have been the highlight of the weekend.
We're back recording on a phone.
Yeah.
That game was winnable. You lost to a backup quarterback when all they were doing, they played it quite safe. There was no aggressive decisions by Mike McCarthy. They did realize that they could just throw on the secondary, so they did it. CeeDee Lamb, pretty good. But until or unless the quarterback line situation gets fixed or improved, what the hell are we doing here?
The whole line situation was cooked the second Chase Roullier got hurt. And arguably, it was cooked in the offseason when this team did nothing to address the fact that your center is coming back from a six-month injury and to have no backup plan whatsoever. I yelled about it early on in camp. I yelled about it as the beginning of the season started. It was a huge problem. And Trey Turner missing all of training camp was a problem with the quad injury. And I got to think that they thought Wes Schweitzer was going to be able to step in, but the second he had to play center, things went awry. And Trey Turner today was very, very bad. They had no choice but to replace him. Ron Rivera said,
no choice. That's some of the worst guard play I've ever seen in the NFL.
But they brought in Sadiq Charles, and it was marginally better. But you saw Sadiq get driven into the backfield a number of times on run plays. They missed tackle end, pass rushes. It just, across the board, it was bad. And the problem with what's happening right now with the offensive line and with Carson Wentz is that there's no answer. There's, maybe you can go out.
They tried stuff today. They tried some quick stuff. They ran the ball way more. They stuck with, like, last week in the Philly loss, Turner was a huge, not huge, but last week the offense sucked, and I'd say it's 50 chips Carson, 25 line, 25 Turner. I don't think Turner was that bad today. I think Wentz and the line were just that bad. And they were going up against a better pass rush.
I'll be real quick and let Pico. This offense is in a situation where it has to operate perfectly to move the ball. And the second that one thing goes wrong, whether it's extra pressure, it's a penalty,
false start.
They can't overcome anything.
They look like a high school offense in that way, where it's screens, it's draws, it's handoff, 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 and then it's, okay, we have to throw deep. Let's hope we get lucky on a deep ball or there's a flag. It's all short stuff, which is what we were asking for in today's game against the Cowboys. So I give them credit for at least trying that, going heavier with the run, trying this stuff. But then you would like to see the steps into the intermediate passing and then set up a play action and hit a bomb, but they can't do any of that because the second Carson has to drop back, he gets a lot of heat. And I'm not stupid. I understand the offensive line is in complete disarray, but I also find it weird that a lot of fans are looking to cover Carson's ass right now and act like he's playing perfectly, and the only reason that he's not succeeding is because of the O-line. When he does get protection, he misses throws. When he does get protection, he imagines that there's pressure. He commits intentional groundings when he doesn't have to. He's just an anchor on the offense right now. So I think the line, of course, needs to be better, and I don't know if it will get better, but Carson, to me, is the center of it all, and I figured we'd get to this point where we're all annoyed with his play, but I'm pretty upset that it's October 2nd and that we're at this point. I thought we'd at least get to November.
It's October 2nd and they're 0-2 in the division. You know what happens when you're 0-2 in the division through 4 weeks? You ain't making the playoffs. They're 0-2 in the division.
It's not even, but it's 0-2 in the division.
They're 0-3 in the conference. Should they ever get into a tiebreaker situation for a wild card spot, which is maybe asinine to even talk about? Like, your conference record matters, your division record matters.
Does it help in the inverse, though, for draft order?
Hopefully,
yeah.
Sure, but I also... We're
talking about draft order, it's October 2nd.
Right, that's a problem.
Wentz threw it 42 times, and he had 170 yards. That is poor. I'm going to sound like an Englishman. That is piss poor.
He had 8 completions in the first half for 50 yards.
It's their third straight game where they had less than 30 yards.
He was sacked once in that first half, too.
Third straight
game? Two intentional groundings.
Third straight game, they've had less than 30 yards of total offense in the first quarter. Another slow start. Another atrocious start.
But, dude, on the first drive of the effing game, it looked like they were moving the ball a little bit.
Right.
Then you get a false start. Then he took a sack.
Well, Trey Turner false start, and then Trey Turner gets beat like a drum for a sack.
Well, it was – right. And then it was third and 27.
And then it was third, and they were kind of in field goal ranges.
Can we sort for, like, third and, like, 10-plus?
I'm sure we can.
I'd love to search.
And like, look, no offense really loves those situations, but we are sold, and this team was hoping that Carson could at least help you overcome them more with the big arm, being able to see over the line. Maybe he shrugs off a defender, but he looks just as helpless as Heinicke did, and they aren't really trusting him to try and do anything deep down the field. He was supposed to be an upgrade over Heinicke, and they're still treating him as if he's a borderline backup, and maybe that's what he is, because that's what Indy and Philly treated him as.
The problem is that when there is actual pressure, he doesn't feel it. And then when there isn't pressure, he acts like he's seeing ghosts. And he'll make a great throw like he did on the touchdown throw to Jahan Dotson. And you see the glimpse of, like, come on, like, we need to see that throw more often. But on top of the mistakes with Carson, there's also some baffling play calling, time clock situations at the end of the first half, not running the 10 seconds off, calling timeouts, and then you get the ball back and you're running. There's just the operation from the ball boy to the owner is not working.
Ball boy's catching a lot of strays.
Poor ball boy.
It's 2 out of 3 hosts are blaming the equipment staff or the ball boys. I think the ball boys were okay today.
It's not where I'm blaming.
Yeah.
I think my top blame is not the coaches. It's not Dan. It's not the business team. It's the evaluators. It's the people that put this thing together. And unfortunately, the people that put this thing together are the coaches. Like,
so in a way, you are blaming the coaches.
It's the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah.
Like, they're pointing at each other. You put this thing together. And listen, I know that Ron's teams get hot late. And maybe there's a run coming. And this is all hysteria, right? But going into this game, you two were fairly confident in this. And I said, your confidence lays in 3 things. For an offensive fix. At 4. Really, you needed 4 things to change. A defense suddenly capable of stopping big plays when they've been prone to giving up big plays for over a year now. Scott Turner making some adjustments, getting some quick stuff going, sticking with the run.
He did that for the most part.
Yeah.
But
the biggest 2 issues I had with your guys' lines of thinking was that this offensive line could play better or be schemed up better. And that Wentz could play better or fit within the offense better. You guys thought that was possible. I did not. Now, a lot of that was because of this Dallas defense, right? Tennessee ain't Dallas. Maybe next week's a new week.
We're always looking to the next week, though. No, it's always that.
I mean, my fault in my thinking was that the Eagles' interior D-line was so damn good that it made the Commanders' interior O-line look that bad. And not that I necessarily expected those guys to be stalwarts up front, but one of our good friends who's a Cowboys reporter came over and was talking to us and was like, the Dallas D-tackles haven't done anything in 4 weeks.
You can name names. Bobby's fine with being named.
Right. They haven't done anything in Bobby Belt. They haven't done anything in 4 weeks, and they are blowing up your offensive line. And this was just at the end of the first quarter. He's like, this could be a long, long, long 4 quarters for you.
He was correct.
That's something that we've gotten used to in Dallas.
Dude, that was the drive they pulled Turner after.
Yeah, but it had to happen. I mean,
we're killing Turner and we're killing the guards. The center, shockingly, the center they signed last week sucked.
Yeah.
They signed Who could have seen that coming?
And there's injuries there. Like, I get that, but...
Right, no, the context... And they're going to say, we're going to watch the film, and they'll divvy up the blame on this sack and this throw. But right now, in the heat of the moment, the only takeaway that matters is that the offense is broken. They drafted a receiver. They paid another one. They got Curtis Samuel back. They have Logan Thomas. They have these running backs, and it doesn't matter because the O-line is terrible, and Wentz is confused, and they can figure out who's to blame on what. But I don't care. That's not my job. My job is to just point out what we're seeing, and what we're seeing is an offense that is worse than last year's.
And the O-line was bad. We've established that. Part of a couple of the plays you can point out that Wentz was subpar on that maybe a more average viewer might blame the O-line on.
He rolled into it. He literally, dude, at some point you got to step up into the pocket.
Sam Cosby had DeMarcus Ware blocked around the back end.
DeMarcus Lawrence around the back of the pocket.
And Wentz stepped backwards into it, the same thing he did in Detroit with Aiden Hutchinson. And then his first intentional grounding penalty, Micah Parsons somehow gets blocked one-on-one with John Bates and forces Carson out of the pocket. Carson has time at that point to get rid of the football, to throw the ball over the line of scrimmage when he's outside the pocket and move on to live another play. But Carson keeps rolling, gets hit, and as he's getting hit, tries to get the ball out there.
Both groundings are on him. And for everybody that the Carson Wentz won't take responsibility crowd, he's taking responsibility. It keeps happening.
He's getting good practice at it.
But the players are going to get pissed, man. Like, so yes. I was thinking about this. A couple years ago when Ron benched Haskins, and it's weird because now whenever we talk Haskins, it's obviously changed so much. But you can even go back to when Jay had to bench Robert. Players know. And players get pissed. Offensive linemen get pissed. Receivers get pissed. Then the defense knows. The defense played pretty well today. The defense, a competent offense, had a chance to win today. The players know. And eventually that becomes a problem, man. I'm not saying it's there right now. But when Ron benched Haskins to go to Kyle first, and then Kyle got hurt, and then they went to Alex, wasn't that the order?
Yes.
Kyle Allen?
Yes.
I think Ron benched him, he said, it's unfair to the other 52 guys. We got to give our team the best chance to win. Players know. And I'm not saying they're there, but like I was sitting next to Mitch, and midway through that third quarter, I was like, do you try to make a change here and get a spark plug going here? And I think you can make that change and then post-game say, Carson's still our guy, but we just need – with that pass rush, we wanted Taylor's mobility or something.
But
I don't think we're there, but I think we're getting close to there.
I don't think we're there either, but by the way, the guy who's a backup, they always say backup's the most popular player in town. In that locker room, Taylor Heinicke might be the most popular guy in town, and this team loves how tough he is and how he got all he could out of his talents last year. Wentz is – I think he's tough, but he doesn't get all that he has out because of his just shortcomings all over the place. So – look, a couple more games like this. I mean, Ron's going to ride Carson as much as he can because they have to see if it's worth it. They invested in him. They can't bench him yet. But 1-5, 1-6, it could definitely happen.
If
after that Chicago
one
game.
1-5 and 1-6, isn't it Howell?
Sure.
If you're
no,
toast.
It's not. You want to throw Sam Howell out behind this offensive line and get him shell-shocked?
I mean, that's true.
I don't know what the answer is, because if you can't block anybody, no matter who you throw back there is going to be a problem. But if you have even an inkling that Sam Howell could be your future, You can't put him out here this year and just let him get lit up left and right, because that's when you start seeing ghosts. That's when you start not being comfortable in the pocket, not being comfortable doing anything. And that's why when you talked about bringing in Taylor Heinicke today, it's just too early for it. Just like with the firing of Jack Del Rio after 2 weeks. If you change a quarterback, if you make a change at this point in the season and things continue to go wrong, where does the blame go from there, or where do you go from there? If Taylor comes in and doesn't play well or continues to struggle, you can't go back to Carson. You're basically lighting the rest of the $28 million on fire if you go away from Carson here. It's too early in the season for these massive changes to need to happen. And Ron is a loyal guy and is not somebody, I think, who's going to be quick to make a change like that. I mean, did you guys hear in the post game? He said, it's time to take another step. If you watch the game and you see enough, you should be able to play better.
That implies they've taken a step.
You need to play better. And he said, we need to keep putting them in positions. We need to make plays. But anytime you're close or good enough, that's not good enough.
Right.
And it's just, to me, so much of Ron post game was the penalties effed us, and he was clearly.
John Allen said he thought it was one sided. Maybe it was. But
Ron was clearly very unhappy with it. Ron said at one point, "Hey, it would be nice to get a penalty call for us once in a while," and that's.
Loser talk.
And that's where I was going. I think there's
just yelling in a press box.
I just think there's. I think there are a lot of excuses.
It's like real journalist grind.
Yeah.
Right.
Three idiots drinking beers, screaming at a phone on right. top of a table.
Yeah. Look, I know we talk about Ron's calm demeanor, and it's good in a lot of ways. And also, who cares how he is at the podium, what he's like in the locker room and on the practice field. When we aren't watching is what really matters.
Yeah, like Belichick's the worst ever at a podium.
I would love to see a change up though, of just the we just have to sustain. We were good in some stretches. Just try and do something different. Light into them a little bit. Maybe they'll respond. I mean, Jamin Davis is responding because you ripped him a new one. Try it with the O-line. Try it with Carson. And look, Carson's a special case, I guess. He's very fragile. You have to call him when you're about to draft a fifth round quarterback, so maybe now's not the time. But we just had another game where Terry McLaurin has 2 catches. Where you don't score any points in the first quarter, the same things continue to show themselves, and the coach keeps acting like they're so close. He hasn't said they're close like Bruce Allen, but he likes to kind of act like it.
I made a note of this. It was about midway through the third quarter, and the Commanders had a hold. It was a second down, and they had a second and 12 holding call. So typically you decline that, make it third and 12. But they were on their own half of the field, probably inside their own 30, and Dallas took the penalty. And Dallas takes that penalty for one reason, because then all of a sudden you've got Carson Wentz and that O-line in second and 21, and you got two chances. You have two serious chances at a turnover or a game-altering play. And, like, that is a major problem. That is a team throwing out the book because they want to come get your ass.
Well, I think you can look at what the Cowboys did in the first half and honestly throughout the game. When they took those field goals,
totally.
Some of those were 50-50 calls, whether you're going for it on fourth and two or whatever. But you know that if you put up points, that you're going to put the Commanders' offense in a bad spot where they have to go score and they become one dimensional. And you know you want the ball in Carson's hands in bad situations. And that second and 21, they ran a draw up the middle for 3 yards. And then Carson almost got picked on the third and 18 throw to the right side to Jahan Dotson, I believe. It's early in the season for teams to have a book on you that's this thoroughly written. And it seems like teams have a pretty good book on what to do with this Commanders offense.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that to beat the Commanders, turn in like a C-plus performance. Don't do anything that completely harms your chances of winning, and you'll win by double digits. If you turn in a C- and commit a turnover, then you can still maybe beat them in the fourth. Like, they're just not a hard team to beat right now because you just kind of stand back and let them screw themselves over. You score a touchdown or a couple field goals right at the beginning of the game, and then you coast. And then you get out and move on to a more important opponent.
Can we also say what an ass-kicker it was to get 2 turnovers and have both of them overturned by penalties? The one on Benjamin St. Juice in the middle of the field for the first turnover was a legit penalty. I think you could see he arm-barred him in the middle of the field and then was able to recover and make a pick. Fine. The second one that Cam Curl had to pick along the sideline, they announced it as Benjamin St. Juice. When you went back and looked at it, it looked like it was William Jackson III, maybe, but that looked like a really soft call there. And not at that point, they were still kind of in the game. The offense couldn't do anything. For as many times as the offense has put the defense in a bad situation on a short field, it sure would be nice to get a turnover and put the offense in an advantageous spot, a spot where they can go make a play and score a touchdown.
So that's with those penalties, that's three straight contests with no turnovers for this defense. Well, just trying its damnedest, but it just can't do enough to overcome the offense.
Commanders had 11 penalties for 136 yards. Cowboys had 4 for 20.
Yeah, and that's a huge discrepancy, and I'm sure Ron's annoyed and John Allen thinks it was one-sided. I mean, you can't argue with the numbers. But, I mean, when William Jackson is holding guys deep down the field, you want the refs to hold it, the flag in their pocket because they've already called you for a couple of things? Like, they're not going to feel bad when Sam Cosmi's jumping early. I don't know.
Yeah, right, I mean,
the false start.
Some of that is just how bad the O-line is.
Yeah. And Cosmi's fighting through an injury. Not that I'm excusing any of his jumps, but that certainly is part of it.
Listen, man, on the list of problems, the tackles aren't high. It's the interior.
Absolutely. But tackles are still... If the interior is playing well, the tackles would be a problem because they haven't been great. But
I think if the interior was playing better, the tackles might play better.
Yeah, chicken or the egg.
Right.
Ron wasn't mad about the William Jackson III down the field. He thought he played it well, but got his hands in there. The play that got me on the defense was one of the deep balls to Noah Brown,
my guy,
JP's guy.
Yeah, Mark Parrina trying to cheat me.
Yeah, he had you all wrong. But they hit Noah Brown for a 45-yarder.
Just does so much nice free work.
Right. Free work for us. He was driving back from Cape Cod trying to keep track of this game, and he made one mistake.
Bobby McCain was right back there with him and just couldn't make up ground to make a play, and it was a killer deep play, big play that's been hurting this defense all season long.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, the CeeDee Lamb touchdown. What did William Jackson say? He's like, yeah, man, they just kind of got me.
I think he thought he had safety help, but they did a good job. But, I mean, an easy, wide open, whose fault is it touchdown is one square on the Commander's bingo card. And today you got it, and it's bordering on, like, free space potential.
The other bingo card is a slant over the middle through the linebackers.
Yeah.
That CeeDee Lamb executed to perfection and got the ball on time.
With a backup quarterback, they had a three-play, 75-yard touchdown drive.
All that being said,
at one point, CeeDee Lamb had like 4 straight catches for 60 yards.
Yeah. He had that was – the slant was one of them, and then he had the deep curl where he just sat down perfectly in the middle of the zone. There were 4 Commanders kind of all within 5 yards of him, none of them quite close enough to make a play for 20 yards. But you start looking at the numbers, and if you told me the Commanders were going to run for almost a buck 50 in this game –
yeah, I would have had 3 running backs at 40 plus yards.
Yeah,
you want to get to the numbers, and then I talked to Dotson. I assume we want to run Dotson.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We're not doing game balls. It's the Danny Frank rule, and I think it holds well here. There's nothing to celebrate, except Jerry's beers and something that made Mitch smile. That we'll get to later.
I did my stock up. I'd said Allen, Payne, and Dotson.
Fair, fair, and fair. Okay, the numbers from Mark Parrina.
Real quick with Dotson, any concern about the hamstring there?
You'll hear it. I asked him about it, and I saw enough that not a ton of concern.
That touchdown pass, he burned up his wrist pretty bad on that.
Dude, I saw it. It was gnarly.
That was a gnarly.
It was like a tonal, like right where you wear your watch, or a lot of the young folks wear these wristbands, right where you wear that was just like, dude, it was like the size of a
big watch face.
What is like that size?
It's a like half an Oreo? Half dollar.
Bigger than an Oreo, smaller than a Chips Ahoy.
Yeah.
Well said. All right, over-unders. The roller coaster index. Somehow, Wentz finished under, despite playing like duty butt.
Well, maybe under is still bad.
Oh, I know.
Touchdown.
Right. I know. But like, maybe we should add intentional groundings to the mix because then it would have been over. Numbers 3.5 touchdowns and turnovers. He finished with 3. Made it close. JP and I had the under. Mitch had the over, so that's 1 point for each of us. Gibson, 57.5 rush yards. I put my entire reputation on it. It did not come through. Shocker.
So what happens next now that your entire reputation?
I have nothing left to give, just the clothes on my back. So JP and I had over. Mitch had under. So we each have 1 going into the final category. McLaurin, reception yards, 54.5. He had 15. It's so tilting. So many excuses as to why they can't get him the ball. Yeah. Meanwhile, every other star receiver just gets the ball pelted at them. JP had the under. So that's two correct. Mark screwed you here, too.
Yeah, that's what
I'm telling you. I think Mark's out to get me.
He said he was hungover coming back from Cape Cod. So you win that, JP. Now we each have one season win on over-unders. Congrats, everybody.
Boom.
100 chips. JP had Noah Brown over. We found that the number was 43.5 receiving yards.
Had he it on one catch.
Got that on one catch plus a few others. Easy over for JP. He's now back to 0 chips. Again, I had Antonio Gibson. Wait, did I?
Anytime touchdown?
Yep, I had the anytime touchdown, and then I also had some alternate spread rushing lines. None of it happened.
How much actual money did you lose on Gibson today?
Like 50, 30, and 20.
For you, that's 2 units, 3 units?
Yeah, it hurts. Yeah. Definitely hurts.
Wentz over 231.5 passing yards?
Yeah, so Mitch and I were both wrong. And on the 100 chips overall, Mitch is now minus 200, and I'm 95.
No real money on Carson.
And then the Benjamin bets.
Smart place to be.
There wasn't a lot. I mean, we do 100 chips and we do the over-under segments on TV. There wasn't a lot in this game that was exciting to be betting on.
You two sure sounded different before the game.
Hey, when the lights come on, you got to act.
You guys were all, I mean, didn't you sprinkle the money line in this thing?
I didn't just sprinkle. I might have poured a little.
So don't say that now, dude. That is some revisionist history. The only pick I gave out was the under, which was cash the whole damn time.
Future Peter. When you want to believe in this team this season, don't do it. It's not worth it.
It's too bad we don't have a microphone for that bit. I don't know if the phone's going to pick it up.
The phone will definitely pick it up.
And I think it's none of our Benji bets hit. Shocker. We're now a year and a half into this, and none of us have got it.
I mean, the Benji bet is impossible.
Yeah. When we do it, though, it will be electric.
Is there a $1,000 bill? We should make it a whoever the hell's on that.
Thomas
William Edison. Howard Taft bet.
Do we want to do any recapping of fun stuff or look-aheads, or just want to get to Jahan? Because I know JP's got a flight and TV stuff to do.
Fire away.
Thank you.
Thank you to our boy Rich Scott.
Yep.
Awesome day playing golf.
Yeah, played a really nice afternoon of golf. We had the best dinner of our entire lives, but
very, very good dinner.
I think we're all coming back. I might have literally gained like 5 or 6 pounds this trip.
You've been very worried about your weight.
Yeah.
We had an enormous breakfast when we first got in.
Yeah, I didn't have the breakfast. That was spectacular.
And then we had an enormous times two dinner where Mitch and I were ready to leave after we ate our salads.
Yes.
Before
Why?
We were so stuffed.
Did you eat all that bread?
So much bread so and much butter.
I laid off the bread. But we also,
at least one of us, had a fair number of beers while playing golf and was getting quite full and drunk and was over all of it.
But yes, Dallas was fun. The stadium was the best thing ever. We have to be back at FedEx Field next weekend, which is going to suck. They actually feed us real food here. It's really fun.
Jerry does it right, man.
One of the best things Jerry does is he installed a candy machine.
Oh, what made you smile? Brought to you by TeethKeepers.com. They provide you valuable and valued dental and vision care. Please go to TeethKeepers.com. Mitch, what made you smile?
What made me smile is probably, I don't know if the Teeth Keepers people want to hear this, but the candy wall that Jerry has.
They do want to hear this.
It's the cheapest, easiest thing, and it makes folks so happy. He had up here there were four or five different big bowls of chocolate footballs and Hershey Kisses and super sour.
I just had a warhead.
I was hammering Hershey's.
Hershey's and Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh, that's what I was having.
You were hammering them at me for some reason.
Well, the game was pretty boring. I needed something to do.
We decided our own game was being played up there. And they had another one downstairs with some other candies in it. Maybe it was around Halloween. I don't know. It was genius and it was fantastic and it made me smile.
What made me smile was meeting John and Maria from Laytonsville on the flight down here. Maria is a big pod fan. She's very sweet. She took a picture with Mitch and I, made us feel like big-time celebrities. John regaled us with some stories from RFK. So it's nice seeing friendly faces like that, even in the midst of a very bleak season.
I don't know what made me smile.
The hotel.
I love the hotel. It's my favorite hotel on the circuit.
Having Pete on the road made me smile too.
Yeah, aww, for sure. That was great.
Thank you.
I
like being able to do my job.
This is a little effed up. Being right and you two being wrong makes me smile. But Mitch is thunder stealing by trying to walk back how into you were about the Commanders in this game.
That's making you frown.
I have a thunder stealing accusation.
Of course.
Do you have a response?
If you want to talk about who's right.
Go listen to Wednesday's pod. You were fired up about this game.
If you want to talk about who's right, let's go back. Let's rewind to the pod when they traded for Carson effing Wentz.
And who we were all right. We were all against it.
Nobody was for it. You were the most against it.
He's now trying to deflect. And,
yeah, you've thunderstole like, because you were super into this game. You were super into it. And now you're like, oh, I didn't like this
Mitch
at
is
all.
Like, go back to the 2016 season when I told you Ryan Anderson wasn't a worthy second-round pick.
Beautiful weather down here in Dallas. Oh, dude, I almost got arrested.
Yeah, JP almost got arrested.
Like
by the mean sheriff. That
was like the meanest
cop
in history. It was like a very weird turning lane, and I didn't know where to go, and I started to go the wrong way, and this dude flipped out. We're just trying to find lot three, damn it.
Stop! With both hands up and just berated JP. I was kind of like the embarrassed kid in the front seat.
It was a very awkward situation. I was like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I thought that's where I was supposed to go.
Yeah.
You got the whole damn road blocked.
That guy sucks. Screw him. I did not like that.
Yeah, he was a jerk. Should we get to Jahan?
Let's go to Jahan.
Always appreciate getting to talk to Commanders rookie wide receiver Jahan Dotson. Some great catches today, a touchdown today, tough effort. Let's start with kind of how you feel you played your first trip to Big D.
Yeah, I played pretty solid, you know. Definitely could have made some plays for our team when they counted. But I feel like the opportunities that came my way, I was able to make the most of them. You know, just trying to make a play for the team. That's all it is, especially on the touchdown. I get a chance in the red zone to go make a play for the team. I'm trying to just capitalize. Carson gave me a chance, and I was able to make a play.
Big picture, though, for the offense. You're able to move the ball some, able to run the ball some, but gets bogged down kind of when you get inside the 30. How do you guys fix that?
Yeah. Well, today it was just beating ourselves, you know. I think we had about 10 penalties for over 100 yards, and when you're in a league like this in the NFL, playing against good teams every single week, you can't beat yourself. So we're going to focus on that, get back to the film, see the things that we didn't execute on, fix them, and move on.
Everybody said it. It felt like it was a really good week of practice, and you guys were really dialed in for this one. Does it make the loss tougher knowing that it was pretty close? I mean, it was a one-score game late in the third, fourth quarter.
Yeah. Every loss to me is a difficult loss. I don't like losing at all. And I know it hurts these guys in the locker room, you know. A lot of us aren't used to losing. So we just gotta fix this, you know. It's not too much that we have to fix. We got to get it right. We're going to get back on the drawing board, put together another good week of practice, and hopefully come out with a W next week.
Obviously not the result you want, but you got to see your close friend Micah Parsons out there. Was it kind of surreal at all, two guys being on the same NFL field?
Yeah, for sure. Especially a guy that I live with. Penn State that I saw excel at the college level, playing with him and then now against him. It is definitely pretty cool to share that moment with him. I'm super happy for him, and I wish him the best this year.
Except when he comes to FedEx.
Yeah, except when he comes to Washington, you know. We gotta get the W back.
How you feeling, by the way? I know you came out the hammy, I think.
Yeah, feeling pretty good. I was just going to get some work done. I think it just cramped up a little bit. So looking to get some work done and be back out there next week.
I know the training staff wants you to stop talking to me and start talking to them. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty strong.
Loser talk.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.